funeral. I respect him for that. I'm going to be strong for him. I used up more of my stash than I thought. I'm running low. I spent months and even years as a kid living with my grandfather Tom and my grandmother Nona in Idaho and Texas when I felt my mother couldn't be bothered with me. Tom is hard but fair, a good man, and I was incredibly close to Nona, who loved me and was better than a mother to me. She always forgave me, and I could be a pretty fucking wild kid. Nona had been ill in 1986, and I had ignored it. When she died and Tom called to tell me, the bottom fell out of my world, but I was so fucked up that I couldn't even cry. I was going to fly to the funeral, but I was too strung out and wasted that day to get on the plane. I would have had to confront my past, confront my mother, spend time with family that I had to run away from. There were just too many issues. They had abandoned me, and I had abandoned them. People were calling me saying I had to come, but I never went. I love my grandmother, and she was very important to me, but I couldn't face it. Instead, I got wrecked in front of the tube, feeling ashamed and guilty, and I wrote Nona, a song for her, which we included on Girls, Girls, Girls. In my fucked up state, that was the best I could do.
Deanna Richards. It breaks my heart when Nikki thinks I couldn't be bothered with him as a child. I loved him more than life itself, and I still do. I've wanted to tell him the truth all my life, but I've never had the chance. And the truth is that my own family, my own mom and my sisters, plotted against me to take Nikki away from me. I didn't know at the time what was going on. I was so naive. You can't fathom that your family would do such a thing, but they took Nikki away. They did it slowly. It started off with them telling me to send Nikki to stay with them for the weekend. Then they would ask me to send him for a couple weeks or a month because they would say he needed to be around a man or have a man's influence. I miss Nikki so much, but I thought that they were trying to help me and he would soon be back with me, even when he ended up spending the whole summers with them in Idaho. But they were telling him I was wild, and then they started telling me that they weren't sending him back because he didn't want to come. I didn't realize that they were poisoning him against me until one day, when he was around 10, I was just sick of him being away, and I called him to say, Nikki, it's time for you to come home. And Nikki told me, no, once you get some roots and a dependable life and can take care of a child, then I will come home. This was out of a child's mouth. Well, wasn't too hard for me to figure out who put those words into the child's mouth. Then, when my mother died, Tom and my sisters didn't even tell me when she was being cremated. Tom only told me afterwards, when my sisters had already been to the house and been through her things and taken everything that they wanted.
Tom Reese. Bullshit. Nona and I never said anything against Deanna around young Nikki. We were very careful what we said about her. If she had pulled some damn thing on us, we made sure we got well away from Nikki before we talked about her. Whenever Deanna would call for us to send Nikki, we would leave it up to him. We'd never try to run that boy's life. He stood on his own 2 feet. If Nikki wanted to go see his mother, we'd pay his way for him and pay it back again. If he didn't want to go, he didn't go. But he always did go. Every time until he got to be about 13. Deanna would throw him out every time. She threw him out of L.A. and every damn place she went to. We'd get a call from Nikki saying, Grandma, can I come home? And we'd get money to him to get a plane home. One time, Deanna just left him with some woman in Sparks, Nevada and went off with a guy. The woman phoned us, saying, what am I supposed to do with this boy? And I had to drive over and fetch him. Deanna has a screw loose and it's drug-induced. You name it, LSD, marijuana, she used to take it. She was taking drugs before Cece was born, before Lisa was born, even before Nikki was born. She was flying half of the time. Nikki was very loyal to his mother for years and years, more than she deserved. When he asked us for anything, we used to give it to him. If he asked Deanna for anything, she told him to go to hell. Nikki did pretty good with her until the time he went to live with her in Seattle, when he was about 13, and she threw him out of there too. After that, he would absolutely have nothing to do with her. I guess he decided that she didn't care.
Which side of the blade is sharper? The lie or the truth? It all seems irrelevant when your jugular's sliced open and you're lying in a pool of blood for the whole world to see. May 8th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10 p.m. Tom is here now, and I think it might be a good thing for me. I can't get wasted in front of him, so I just do my little maintenance shots in the bathroom. Tommy came over tonight. We did a couple shots of Jack with Tom and made small talk. Tommy can tell I'm sick. Tom asked me if I wanted to go to the doctor. I said it was just a really bad flu. If I went to the doctor and they saw my veins, they would call the police in a New York second. I'm going to go to the clinic in Burbank tomorrow and register for a 30-day program, but I'm only going to do it for 3 or 4 days, then just go cold turkey from there. May 10th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:40 p.m. Day 1, coke and dope free. Went to the clinic today and got my first dose. I'm out of dope. I threw all my rigs away, even my Dom Perignon box. I gotta tell you, I'm fucking sick. I got an illegal script for Valium from this quack we all use. They always help ease the pain. I'm shitting and puking so much, I'm trying to keep it together for my grandfather. Thank God for him. I remember Tom coming out to the heroin house. When you're in the middle of a crisis, it's not easy to notice other people's pain. Looking back, my grandfather had to be dealing with a lot of pain. Losing Nona was the hardest thing he had ever had to go through. And on top of that, the boy he raised was in a tailspin and heading towards an early death. He probably saved my life, and I'll always owe him for that. I will forever regret not being there for him in return.
Tom Reese. When Nona died, Nikki was devastated. But he was also pretty fucked up. I went to stay with him once or twice, and the way of life he had was not to my liking. And he was so skinny. A good gust of wind would have blown him through a knot hole. Nikki didn't inject in front of me, but it was obvious he was doing it. He would sit around with his buddies talking, and their drug talk might have made sense to them, but to me it sounded like gibberish. I used to see people in the same state in my years in the military. It never held any appeal for me. While I was staying at Nikki's, I'd often answer the door for him. Sometimes it was girls. I'd let them in except for the real youngins, who I'd send packing. I never let the drug peddlers in. One guy was kind of persistent until I waved my shotgun in his face, and then he never came back. I was worried for Nikki, and I told him what I thought, but it just went in one ear and out the other. Stopping Nikki was like trying to stop a tornado. I couldn't do anything except look out for him and hope.
Dancing on glass. Can't find my doctor. Bones can't take this ache. If you dance with the devil, your day will come to pay. My fuel-injected dreams are bursting at the seams. Am I in Persia or lost in Spain? I've been to hell. Hope I never make it back to dancing on glass. May 11th, 1987, Van Nuys, midnight. Day 2, coke and dope free. I can't believe it's been 2 days without any junk. Went to get dosed today, saw a few guys I know. Fucking smack, just ruins people's lives. At first it seems so sweet, then one day you wake up to a monster. I'll see you tomorrow. I'm too sick to write. I have to go lay down. I haven't slept much. May 12th, 1987. Van Nuys, 11:30 p.m. Day 3, coke and dope free. I haven't had anything for 3 days now. This withdrawal is the most painful, intense one I've been in. It's like shock therapy. My guts are ripping. I'm puking and shitting. I'd do anything for a fix, but I won't give in. This is the worst day so far. It always is. Day 3 and 4 is when most guys give in. I can't sleep for the pain. I've heard stories about hookers who will blow a fucking donkey for a fix rather than go through this. That's how much this fucking hurts. Today was my last dose. Maybe one more day. But I don't want to get strung out on methadone. If you're hooked on that, it's almost impossible to get off. I'm so sick. Thank God I'm getting dosed or I would definitely die from this one. I am so sick, I'm even sick of writing that I'm sick in this diary. Unused lyric. I've never been to Eden, but it's nice I hear tell. When I die, I'll go to heaven, because I've done my time in hell. May 13th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:20 a.m. Day 4, coke and dope free. Last methadone visit this morning. I haven't eaten anything but candy. I'm too sick to go into the store and face people. Pete brought me a bag of candy and ice cream. Every time I've kicked, I go through this sugar thing. What's next? I'm gonna fucking get fat? My whole body feels like it's cracking into pieces. Fragile doesn't even come close to describing how I feel. May 14th, 1987. Van Nuys, 4:30 a.m. Day 5, coke and dope free. Had to go to the album listening party. I'm still sick as a dog, but a handful of painkillers and a lot of whiskey got me through. Vanity showed up. I was talking to this black stripper and Vanity got all weird and abrasive. I'm so dope sick, I feel brittle. Wouldn't take much for me to shatter in a million pieces. P.S. Speaking of dogs, I forgot I put my money down on a German short-haired pointer. I couldn't get him at the time because he wasn't old enough, but he's getting delivered tomorrow. I'm going to call him Whiskey. The Girls, Girls, Girls listening party was at the Body Shop, a strip club on Sunset. The band posed for photos with 5 strippers whose panties spelt out M-O-T-L-E-Y-C-R-U-E, Motley Crue. Vanity lost her mind when she came in because the stripper standing next to me was a black chick. The other thing that I remember about the party is that asshole Yngwie Malmsteen showed up. He'd been dogging the band in the press yet dared to show up to our album listening party. So we had security throw him out on his ass on the curb. But I was so sick from the junk, it was all I could do to hold it together. May 15th, 1987. Van Nuys, 5 p.m. Day 6, coke and dope free. MTV has said no to the Girls, Girls, Girls video because of the topless strippers in it. We sent them one that was so out there so that they would be happy with the one we really wanted them to play. If we sent them the one they approved first, they would have made us tame that one down, suckers. Tom left today, but I think I might still be okay getting cleaned up for the tour. It helps when I have things to focus on, like having a new dog, Whiskey. He just came today. Tom loves him. It's when I'm left to my own devices that I go fucking insane. I've always been too good at making my own entertainment. I can safely say I'll never use heroin again. It's just a nightmare. I feel so much better, but my sheets on the bed stink from the gallons of toxic sweat that have poured out of my body. I have a pile of clothes in the closet with shit all over them from the first few days. I've been able to get a few hours of sleep at a time now, and I can hold something down other than sweets. I feel hopeful. Random thought. Cleaning up is dirty work.
Doc McGee. Nikki used to sometimes have these dogs that were kind of messy and sloppy. I used to call them the heroin puppies. Can I tell you something that's not too nice? I used to think of Vanity as a heroin puppy as well.
May 16th, 1987, Van Nuys, 8 p.m. Day 7, coke and dope free. So another Motley Crue album is set to come out, and we kindly donate another fucking chunk of profit to Neglector Records. Why should they own our music? This industry is the most fucked up business ever. Musicians spend their childhoods learning to play their instruments in their bedrooms. Then they spend their lives in a recording studio creating music. Then some fucker in a suit comes along and says, if I can distribute what they've done to enough people, I'm going to sell product to create cash flow for my corporation. At which point I ask myself, where did we lose the music? We write the music, it's our songs, our vision, our message, our angst. So how can some record company completely own Motley Crue or Aerosmith or Led Zeppelin's music? I mean, what the fuck? System is slavery. It's our music, it's our business, we should own it. I can't believe I'm clean. I feel lucid, alert, and alive. I hurt like hell, and my nerves are on the edge, but I'm clean. Just in time for the machine to fire up. May 17th, 1987, Van Nuys, midnight. Day 8, coke and dope free. Slash came over and we just hung out, played with whiskey and played guitars. Then got out of here and went to lunch. Slash even told me he thinks I'm looking better. I told him I just got out a real bad kick and I was done with the worst of it. He said he knows how hard it is. Vanity kept calling, but I let the answering machine take the strain. I'm not ready for her right now. I'm making progress, but I'm still fragile. More emotionally than physically now. Unused lyric. South Street Sam sells it by the box, half price murder, and double price rocks. Easing in on 20, he's looking 85. He'll be pushing up daisies by the time he's 25. May 18th, 1987, Van Nuys, 9 p.m. Day 9, coke and dope free. I ran into Jason today while I was shopping on Melrose and basically ignored him. He saw me and came over and asked why I hadn't called him lately. I just said that I had his number if I needed it, but I was planning not to use it. The parasites are panicking because their free meal is over. When I read these diary entries, it boggles my mind how much power I had when I finally decided to quit. I don't know if it was fear or greed that eventually got me to that point, but whatever it was, it seemed to be working. Temporarily. May 19th, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:20 p.m. Day 10, coke and dope free. Had a meeting with management earlier. They want to hire a jet for the tour so we can leave right after the shows, base ourselves in a city for a week or two at a time while we play all of the nearby dates. Doc said it would save us money, but I'm not stupid. I know the real fucking reason. They're fucking terrified of me and Tommy and Vince heading off to the clubs, getting wasted after the show. They think they can keep an eye on us this way, and we can't get up to too much bad shit up in the air every night. I see their plan, but I went along with it. It might even be what I need. I said we would only do it if the jet was painted black with a big, naked chick on the side. Doug went pale, but said he'd see what he could do. They seemed amazed that I had color and gained some weight. I've even been lifting a few weights in my garage. My suspicion of our management strategy was entirely correct. Their plan was an honorable one, but overlooked one major flaw. Being based in a city for several nights at a time rather than one night would give us plenty of time to track down all the local services and supplies that we shouldn't be tracking down.
Doc McGee. It was always way easier to tour Motley Crue on private jets than on buses. We could get the journey done in 1 hour rather than 5 or 6, and on buses they were a fucking mess. They were always running around drunk or biting people, and considering the state Nicky was in at that stage, we wanted to have him somewhere we could keep an eye on him.
May 20th, 1987, Van Nuys, 9:30 p.m. Day 11, coke and dope free. Been down in the garage lifting weights and riding my exercise bike every day. It's nice that for once my muscles are aching for a good reason. One bad thing about coming off drugs is putting on weight. Which is worse, being strung out or fat? May 21st, 1987, Van Nuys, 11:30 p.m. Day 12, coke and dope free. Not much to do again today except a few phone interviews for the album. All the journalists are the same. They all ask identical questions as though they're the only person to have ever thought of them. I hate the press almost as much as they hate me. But really, when are they going to ask about the music? What is the meaning behind the song Nona? Or did I know Girls, Girls, Girls was an Elvis Presley album? Duh. I'm really happy to be off dope. I can't believe I did it, on my own no less. To be on a journey that you see no ending to, and then finally getting to where you're going feels good. Like the insanity has stopped. I'm really happy. Pete is strung out, and I hear King is too. I can't be around anybody who uses junk. I just can't, even if they're my best friends. May 22nd, 1987, Van Nuys, 11:20 p.m. Day 13, coke and dope free. T-Bone has just left. My head is still buzzing from talking to him. He had a dream last night that he was playing drums upside down, and he wants to turn it into a reality. So he told management he wants them to design a kit that can spin around like a gyroscope while he's playing in it, and they're looking into it. Tommy is so enthusiastic, and I hope it happens, but rather him than me. When I'm trying to survive a hangover, the last thing I would want to be is fucking spinning upside down. Hope the front row likes the taste of projectile vomit. P.S. You know what's weird? I don't even know where Vince or Mick live. May 23rd, 1987. Van Nuys, 11:50 a.m. Day 14, coke and dope free. Days like today are beautiful. There's nothing to do. Nobody's on the phone. The sun is out. The doors are open. I'm laying on my back right now, writing to you, soaking up the sun, listening to Aerosmith and Bad Company. I'm not strung out, and that feels good. I feel like I've finally got the monster under control. I'm excited. What a perfect day. May 24th, 1987, Van Nuys, 5:45 p.m. Day 15, coke and dope free. Today we went to look at the plane we were hiring for the tour, but it seems management forgot to tell them about the little adjustments we needed, the Motley Crue accessories. So I patiently explained to the guy that we needed it painted black, and we needed a naked girl painted on the outside. He started stuttering that they couldn't paint it black, and I just gave him a look and said, well, that's a shame, we can't take it then. He said he'll see what he can do and get back to us. We agreed to compromise. The girl can be riding a bomb on the side of the plane. Fuck, sometimes people don't seem able to handle the simplest request. No is not a word I think should be in the dictionary when it comes to creativity. P.S. I did it. Totally clean. Amazing. I'm not even the same person I was 2 weeks ago. I've been playing so much music, practicing, writing, getting all the ideas together for the tour, shows, plans, hotels. Food, stage clothes, new basses, amps. Yes, I'm back. Band rehearsal today. I'm really excited to play. Pete wants to go out after, but I can't hang out with him anymore. He's on methadone, but still I have to stick to my guns. I feel sorry for him because I'm his only friend, and he knows why we can't hang out anymore. Junk ruins lives and friendships. I hope he gets clean, too. May 27th, 1987. Van Nuys, 11 p.m. Last night I went to the cat house on my own. I always know plenty of people there. I had loads of Jack and tequila shots, but no more than a few bumps. I fucked this girl in the bathroom, brought another girl home, but this morning I can't remember her name and I can't wait for her to leave. Girls do their best, but they're never going to take the place of drugs because drugs don't talk back. Short rehearsal today, but we sounded good. I was a bit hungover, and that felt bad after feeling so good for the last 2 weeks.
Deanna Richards. After Nicky moved to Los Angeles, I hardly heard from him. He would occasionally call me very late at night or in the middle of the night, demanding money. I would gather up all I could and send it to him, and then I would never hear from him again unless he got in really bad trouble. When Motley Crue started getting big, I was proud of Nicky, but I could see what a toll it was taking. I was so scared for him because I knew it was killing him. It was obvious he was taking drugs, and I tried to talk to him twice about getting help, but he wouldn't even discuss it. He said he didn't have a problem, I have a problem. Then, later on, when he was married for the first time and I went to see him in Los Angeles, he told me the only reason he started taking drugs was because I had been drinking and drugging for years. Well, I never took drugs, and I didn't start drinking until after Nicky left Seattle and refused to come back.
May 29th, 1987, Van Nuys, 11 a.m. Just woke up. Phone was ringing. It was Gene Simmons, reminding me that we're getting together to write music today. Glad he called, because I forgot. 10 p.m. Gene came over in his new black Rolls. When he was leaving and backing out of the driveway, he got too close to the wall and was freaking out because his car was about an inch away from getting scratched to fuck. Me and Pete laughed. I mean, it serves him right for what he said about my lyrics. Oh, yeah. Pete came over this afternoon. He looks better than I've seen him in a long time. He's almost clean. No junk. Just getting dosed. Gene Simmons and I wrote a song one time, but when I showed him the lyrics, he said they were too radical and wouldn't get played on the radio. Later, I used the same words on the Girls, Girls, Girls single, and radio had no problem playing it. He was always a weird guy. I remember the first time he came over to my house, I did a line of coke and took a Quaalude and was drinking and asked Gene whether he wanted anything. He said he didn't do drugs or drink. And I asked him, well, what he did instead, and he said, I fuck. So I asked him, well, what do you do after you fuck? And he said, I fuck again. And then I asked him why. Because rule number one, chicks equal trouble. June 1987. Maybe having these dealers follow us is a bad idea. June 1st, 1987, Van Nuys, 12:50 a.m. Rehearsals were a kick today. We decided to hire background singers for the tour. As we progress as a band, we've naturally started to use more background vocals, but it can be hard to cover them live and boring to be stuck on the mic all night. So we decided to use female background singers like the Stones. We'll be auditioning girls all week at rehearsal. Should be interesting. Band needs less rehearsal this tour than usual. The old stuff is tight, and the new stuff isn't that far off. I think the new stuff is simpler and more bluesy at times. It just falls in the pocket easier. There's the usual excitement about the tour production going around like a virus. I love this part, the part where the visual meets the music. We're having the stage show evolve. More on that later. My ears are ringing. Off to bed, working out in the morning. When you're sitting on a plane 40,000 feet up in the air, looking out the window, dreaming of your future and how bright it appears to be, or maybe just watching the drops of rain being pushed into different designs from the force of air at 400 miles per hour, well, life feels good. Then the oxygen masks fall, the plane jumps, snaps, and jolts. People start to scream, babies burst out crying, people start praying, all in time to the overhead announcement that we're going to crash. Right then, as your life flashes before your eyes, you hear yourself say, God, if you get me out of this one, I'll stop. Insert lie right there, forever. Right then, the nose of the plane pulls up and the captain says, wow, that was a close one, folks. We're okay. We'll be landing in 30 minutes and we're all safe and sound. Sorry for the scare. That's how getting hooked on junk is. When the kick is over, you can't believe you ever got on that plane in the first place. The question is, will you ever fly again? June 3rd, 1987, Van Nuys, 10:45 p.m. We met about 10 singers today. Some of them could sing and some of them could dance. The ones that could sing couldn't dance. The ones that were pretty couldn't sing. And the ones that were ugly sang like Janis Joplin. What a nightmare. We'll have more tomorrow. This one girl was dancing in front of us, grinding on the mic, and then went over to Mick and was singing in his face. I had to look down and away so I didn't burst out laughing. Almost pissed my pants laughing after she left. Good times. Mick's playing his ass off. I haven't seen that fire in him in a while. I think the break did him good. June 5th, 1987, Van Nuys, 11:20 p.m. We finally picked our background singers, a girl named Amy and one named Donna. I told the band the first rule of the tour, nobody fucks the background singers. These tours have enough drama and problems without us importing dysfunctional relationships right into the fucking heart of them. But it was amazing to hear the vocals on top of all the guitars and drums. It took it to another level. Badass. Of course, I foresee problems. I mean, chicks equal trouble. A lot of phone calls today with management about last-minute details for the tour. If we have one more meeting at rehearsal, I think I'm going to lose my cool. They seem to think that since we're all together, it's their time to trap us, and we end up not getting to rehearse as much as we should. I don't know. Maybe that's not a bad thing. An over-rehearsed rock band can sound sterile.
Doug Thaler. We auditioned the background singers at the practice facility in Burbank. One of them was Amy Canyon, and looking back, I should have known from the start we'd have trouble with her. When she came to the audition, she'd only been married for 6 months, and she was already telling us she wanted to go on tour to get away from her husband. Nikki laid down the law about nobody sleeping with the backing singers, and the band all agreed, which was highly ironic, given that Vince had already tried his luck with both of the girls at the audition and been knocked back. But when Amy later turned her attention to Mick, it was a very different story.
June 12, 1987, Van Nuys, 9:30 a.m. I just realized I haven't written in here for a week. Maybe because I've just been getting on with life, like other people do. Rehearsal's been great. I've not been drinking more than the half a bottle of Jack at night. Even Jason has given up on calling me. This is like a health kick. Maybe there are two things I do when I'm falling apart. Writing this book and phone Vanity, ha. Huh. Now for the hard part, holding it together on tour. June 15th, 1987, Van Nuys, 11 a.m. So today I'm packing for the tour. Making a list, checking it twice. Knife, two pairs of leather pants, 8 t-shirts. Boots, rubbers, black nail polish, black eye makeup, get that at Save-On, $3,000 in cash, get the office to drop that off, 2 grams, no syringes, sleeping pills, candles, incense, flask, diary, blank journals, have whiskey picked up for obedience camp. Now for the killer question, how long before I can dump the psycho girlfriend? All will be revealed. Follow me. June 16th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 2:30 p.m. Got into the hotel from L.A. an hour ago. We're all going down to the arena in a while. I can't wait to see the stage set. After all the bombastic sets in the past and all the cheap invitations that have followed our every move, our direction is simpler this time. It's raw, stripped back, but huge. A lot of the power will come from the lights, the pyro, and our way too big PA. We shoot the Rolling Stone cover tomorrow, and I want to see what's around here for the shoot. Since I'll be doing my best to keep my nose clean on this tour, I'm going to try to write a lot every day. Someday, maybe, I'll have kids, and they can read these diaries, or no, maybe not. The Rolling Stone writer is hanging around asking us questions. I wish he would leave us alone. He doesn't know shit about rock and roll. Same typical stupid questions. How many girls do we fuck? How much do we party? No questions about music, spirit, lyrics, soul. No questions about the Dolls or Angus Young. Just the same old bubblegum magazine bullshit. June 17th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 1:40 a.m. Wow, the set turned out amazing. It's exactly what we've intended it to be. It has so many levels and different looks. Tommy's solo is insane. The drums flip all around. In fact, I think he's insane, thank God. I have to tell you, if you ever have to come to Tucson in June, don't. It's fucking hot. I mean, the kind of hot where rattlesnakes won't even come out. You walk outside in the day, and a wave of heat slams you in your face. Feels like you've stuck your head in a fucking oven. All the usual suspects came around tonight. I said no to all but two lines and a few shots. I'm not starting off the tour with a hangover. I can't believe I'm off junk. What a horror story that was. But I have to watch it, because the junkies just seem to sniff me out. The word's on the street that I'm clean, and they don't like it. I want to help out Slash and give his band some shows. They're not worth any tickets, but I believe in them. Cool new band, but the singer, he can be an asshole, but what's new, right? I can see him and Vince bumping heads. It's good to see Fred again with his perfect hair and Grizzly Adams beard covered in tattoos. He always wears the devil's smirk, which somehow yields him more pussy than the guys in the band. As soon as Fred walks into the room, I know we're really back on the road again. Everybody's hired, the plane is on the runway, trucks and buses all warmed up. Hanger-oners are floating around outside the arena, so let the madness commence, because I know it will.
Fred Saunders. I was tour security for Motley Crue ever since the Shout of the Devil tour. When Doc McGee first hired me, he said the band was so wild I should do whatever it took to keep him in line. In fact, he said he'd give me a bonus every time I hit them. I told him he got himself a deal. I hit Motley a lot. I once broke Tommy's nose in Indiana. I broke Nicky's ribs, and I beat the shit out of Vince many times because he's an asshole. I think I even hit poor Mick once. That was just to complete the set. Nicky was always the strongest of the guys. He was the brightest and had the biggest ideas. Vince had just got lead singer syndrome, and Tommy was a typical drummer. He's always 100 miles per hour and everything is fine by him. Mick just always wanted to drink his wine and not be bothered with anything. So it was always Nicky's moods that shaped what happened with Motley. Nicky and I became friends and had a good relationship. On the whole, we'd get fucked up drunk together, cut our hands and swap blood to show that we were blood brothers. But Nicky was a very wild, unpredictable guy. He had so many facades. He'd rarely show his true personality. I also worked with Ozzy Osbourne a lot. And there are many similarities between those guys. Ross Halfen. Fred was this big ex-Hells Angels guy, and part of his job for Motley Crue was scoring cocaine. They used to call it Krell, from that movie Heavy Metal, where monsters from the planet Krell came down with big noses and snorted earth. They'd say, "Where's the Krell, man?" and ask Fred, "Dude, are you gonna Krell me?" Fred's other job was stopping them getting smashed up and getting into fights. One thing about Motley Crue is they will never turn away from a fight. Vince, Nicky, and Tommy are fearless. If there are 50 people, they will fight them. You have to hit them with a brick to stop them. They will take on the world.
9:30 a.m. What the fuck is wrong with housekeeping? They just keep knocking on my door. Now I can't sleep. Fucking great. It's going to be a long-ass day. 2:40 p.m. Just woke up. Finally, about 10:30 this morning, I ordered two shots of Jack for breakfast so I could go back to sleep. Room service lady was about 65 and gave me that grandmotherly look of disapproval. The fact that I had on more makeup than she did probably didn't help. Vanity's coming in today, and I'm dreading the drama. Why do I put myself in these situations? I really need to say no. She will either, one, embarrass me, two, be a bitch, three, be over hyper, four, complain, five, get high, six, stumble around and get drunk. I mean, isn't that my fucking job? I'd rather sleep with the grandma room service lady. June 18th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 4:20 a.m. Vanity's asleep in the other room, lying in bed. Her hair's all over the pillow like a seductive Medusa. skin like milk chocolate against the white sheets, and goose down pillows. You'd think she was a gift from the gods, but somehow we are like fire and ice, oil and vinegar, and mostly it's painful. We argue a lot. Not all the time, but a lot. Let's just say we end everything in an argument, usually over some stupid stuff. Somehow, I feel like I'm in high school when we're fighting, because nothing that we ever fight about is even important. I'm sure she feels the same. In fact, I know she does, because she told me so right before she told me to fuck off and went to bed last night. I just took a celebration shot in the bathroom. Okay, I admit to having brought a small bundle of gear. God, I love that warm feeling that comes over me. Okay, I admit I brought a pack of rigs. It's the best feeling in the world as you slump back and everything in life feels perfect. I know I said I wouldn't use again, but this was just a final kiss goodbye. Just a pat on the back for being off dope, right? Now I'll sleep like a baby. Oh yeah, we did the cover shoot for Rolling Stone. First show tomorrow. Better get some sleep. Life's good. P.S. I got the dope from Pete. He's back on. Do you know what I think now when I hear that diary entry? I guess that you know you're insane when you're lying to yourself in your own diary. That's what I think.
Bob Timmons. I always thought Nikki and Vanity had an extremely unhealthy relationship. Basically, they were co-addicts. Whenever Nikki got attention, Vanity would act out her jealousy. If he was in a room talking to people, she would get up on a table and start dancing. There was no support for Nikki at all because essentially, they were always in competition with each other.
Evangelist Denise Matthews. Live hard, die young. That was where my vision was taking me until the reality of staring down that dark pit of death woke me up in shock. That is when I cried out to Jesus to save me lest I die. I was suffering in the bottomless pit playground of cocaine addiction, lifting me higher and dropping me like a steel beam. I'd smoked enough rock that you could lift me up and stick me in the nearest cold grave. Sinking down into deep depression, I camouflaged my pain with even more makeup and a false smile. I have a shocking medical history of high blood pressure, of 250 over 190, plus a heart attack, stroke, and kidney failure due to my addiction. I had blood clots in my brain and had only 3 days left to masquerade this miserable, lifeless creature that I had become. That was 15 years ago. I said, "Do whatever it takes, Jesus. Just don't let me die."
7:35 p.m. More rehearsal today and a lot of hurry up and wait. Beats the hotel. Rich Fisher's still trying to get the jet together, but I guess painting it black is taking longer than we thought. So we'll probably have to lease a Learjet for a few days. Feels so good to be out of L.A. and all that temptation and the losers who creep around. I feel so guilty I did some dope, but it's gone and I'm okay. I need to load up on some music. Better hit the music store. I'd die without music. I feel like I'm getting my life back. I gotta say the band sounds killer. We always pull it together right before the tour. Rehearsals back in L.A. seem to drag on forever. Playing the songs in a dingy little sweatbox just doesn't have the zap it used to. As soon as we have to rise to the occasion, we always get energized and sound tight as fuck. But one thing is bothering me. Vince isn't the same guy he used to be. Since the accident, he seems bitter and withdrawn. I can feel him slipping away from all of us. He seems to not want to be in the gang. He's marching to his own drum, which is fine, but I'm assuming the drift is a resentment he has towards us since he went to jail. Can I blame him? Okay, I gotta get out of here right now. I'm off to a Mexican dinner with Fred Saunders and some of the band and crew. No drugs today, first show tomorrow.
Vince Neil. Nikki and Tommy were complete fucking assholes to me on the previous tour, Theater of Pain. At the time, I was not allowed to drink or use drugs because of my vehicular manslaughter conviction, but we'd be sitting on our jet and they'd think it was real funny to say, "Oh, Vince, pass me that Coke, will you?" I was supposed to be sober and nobody gave a shit. They were just drinking and having fun. Everybody was out for themselves and Nikki was the most spiteful of all. So Nikki and I didn't have much of a relationship on the Girls, Girls, Girls tour. Nikki and Tommy had a relationship, and whatever they did, I made sure I did the opposite thing. I wasn't included in a lot of stuff they did, and I didn't want to be. I mean, heroin? Dude, I might be up for cocktails or a little coke, but there is no fun to be had in heroin. I wasn't comfortable hanging with Nikki. I just didn't want to be involved.
Vince, sober on the Theater of Pain tour? I guess if you don't count all the pills, he was. Tucson Community Center, June 19th, 1987, Sheraton Hotel, 3:30 a.m. I'm a bit smashed right now. We had too many margaritas at dinner. I got in a fight with Vanity again. She just can't shut up, so I told her to shut up or go home. Good fucking night. Nice way to start a tour. 1 p.m. Wow, I just woke up. I feel great. Sleep, the great healer. I have to go to the radio station with Tommy in a while, but first I'm going to go for a swim and lie in the sun for just a bit. Can't wait until Vanity gets the fuck out of here. She's so embarrassing, dancing around, lecturing us on shit. Who is she to tell us about anything? She's just a fucking crackhead. 4:15 p.m. Off to the radio station and then sound check. The whole fucking world is here for the first show tonight. Damn, I wish they'd given us a few shows to iron out the kinks. Plus, this is small. It's like 9,000 people or so. Yeah, it's sold out, but even so. Wish us luck. See you later. 6. Veterans Memorial Coliseum, Phoenix. June 20th, 1987. Sheraton Hotel, Tucson, Arizona, 1:30 a.m. Fucking show was great. I forgot how good it feels to play these songs. I admit to not being in the best shape, so I threw up on the side of the stage during Tommy's drum solo. It was kind of a shock to go full tilt for an hour and a half after all my body's been through. So off to bed. We leave for Phoenix at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon. I think the Weasel Rider from Rolling Stone is going to fly with us. This guy, I swear he's the guy I used to beat up in school. In fact, maybe that's what I need to do, kick his ass. He seems like a B-52s fan. Weak. P.S. Good news. The bitch went back to her brothel or crack house.
Vince Neil. Nikki's fucked up chick Vanity came out to our show in Tucson. As usual, she started doing all her crazy dancing right in front of us while we were trying to play. It was so bad that I told Nikki, dude, get your fucking chick out of here. She was driving everybody crazy. It was real fucking embarrassing.
Ross Halfen. Vanity was a dreadful, horrible thing. She used to dance in the photo pit so everybody could see her. All she'd do every night was dance like it was her show. She'd just crouch down with her legs wide open like she was a pole dancer in a strip bar.
Doug Thaler. Vanity was the kind of chick who would lecture you about how Coca-Cola would rot your teeth and could strip the paint off a car. Then she would go home and get shit-faced on the other kind of Coke. She was always winding the band up when they needed to be mellow. I'm sorry, but she was a real pain in the ass.
Evangelist Denise Matthews. Don't we just hate it when others lie to us, but we don't feel the lie when we're doing the lying? How could I point at anyone's window and smash their glass when my own window was already broken and I had lost all my stones, or better yet, my marbles? Firstly, I had to glue myself back together and then try to help others. But who can really clean up but God? He makes sure we don't bleed to death from all the shards of glass thrown at our feet along the way.
We were all doing the best we could with the tools we had. Unfortunately, the tools we had were crack pipes, syringes, Coke straws, and whiskey bottles. On the plane to Phoenix, 3:25 p.m. I'm on the jet we have to use until ours is ready. The worm from Rolling Stone is with us. I'm going to try and get him fucked up and slip him something. Maybe I can enlighten him. These writers always kiss up to you and then they slit your throat when the magazine comes out. I say keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer, then you can see when their eyes turn brown, right? Mars is hanging awfully close to Amy, the background singer. Something's fishy. Mars always keeps to himself, but he seems a bit smug and sneaky. The one rule is nobody fucks the background singer, so who would have thought Mick would be the first to try? Chicks equal trouble. June 21st, 1987. Day off. Clarion Inn, Phoenix, Arizona, 1:30 a.m. Show was intense, even better than the first one. Denny Zalesko said he'd seen us a zillion times and this was the best the band has ever been. We all ended up in the bathroom at the Coliseum doing tons of blow. There were loads of hot chicks and Vince, as usual, picked the best ones first and rolled out. Mick was hanging with that backing singer chick and me and Tommy did blow so long there were no chicks left when we came out of the John. Lame. I guess I'll take a halcyon, jerk off, and go to bed. Boring.
Tim Lutzi. The girls' tour may have predated the arrival of crack cocaine, but I remember some of Motley used to make their own in the microwave in the dressing room. I didn't notice immediately, but after a few days I noticed the attention the microwave was getting and began to wonder why it was so damn important, especially seeing as the band's wives, girlfriends, and hot chicks in the backstage holding area were getting so little attention in comparison.
Rule number two. Don't give a rock star a microwave in his dressing room. It's kind of like giving matches to an arsonist. Noon. Day off. I'm going to lie in bed all day and watch TV. Did I tell you MTV's hammering our video? The bad news is all these bands are coming out that are B and C rate crew copies. In the end, the record companies trying to cash in will be the death of us if this shit doesn't stop. I feel bad for the fans. Rich Fisher always tries to plan something on our day off, and I always say, it's a day off, leave me alone. I guess since we pay the bills, it's in his best interest, right? I'm really going to try to be good today and tonight. 4 p.m.? Just woke up again. I was just thinking about the time that me and Tommy were tag-teaming this chick behind Kiss's drums while they were playing rock and roll all night, right here in Scottsdale. We thought it was just fun, then we found out it was the drummer's girlfriend. Ouch. Nice girl. I think her name was Bambi. Now there's one you want to take home to Mom. Can you imagine? Hi, Mom. This is my future ex-wife, Bambi. It was also a nice way to get thrown off our first ever tour. You know what was worse than getting thrown off the Kiss tour for bad behavior? Listening to Gene Simmons talk about himself all day and all night long. Sometimes I'd just sit there and say, uh-huh, and write until he was done. For all his ego and bullshit, I like Gene, but I can't like him as much as he likes himself. That would be impossible. Tingley Coliseum. June 22nd, 1987. On our way to New Mexico, 2:30 p.m. Right now I'm on our jet. We're sitting on the runway getting ready to take off. Holy fuck, it's insane. It's black. Have you ever seen a black jet? I'm digging this. We have a stewardess, blonde. We each have our own assigned seats, leather. I've already found a nice place to stash stuff for border crossings. The show's sold out, 11,000 people. Everyone is jacked up, so we're passing around a bottle of Jack with the stereo cranked. Tommy motioned to me to see the back of the plane, and he slid me a bindle. That's my boy. Random scribblings. We are the future, but the future looks bleak. I have no interest other than being uninterested. All these vampires masquerade as leaders and prey on the minds of the weak. All I know is I don't care. And even if I cared, I'd have no hope to carry me to where I need to go. Things I have to do. One, sell the heroin house, and two, dump vanity. County Coliseum, El Paso, Texas. June 23rd, 1987. On the Motley jet to El Paso, 1:30 a.m. Good show, but I'm fucking tired. I couldn't find any blow in this fucking town. I know Fred is holding. Doug and Doc are on him to keep me under control. If I'm tired and I'm doing my job, why can't I have a bump? They treat me like a child. It's fucking stupid. I'm going to buy an 8-ball next time I score so I don't have to go through this drama. We get into El Paso around 2:30 or 3, so I guess I'll be a good boy tonight. Boring. I hate it when people try to control me.
Ross Halfen. Nicky was never a mumbling, reclusive junkie. He always seemed to hold it together. But he would moan all the time. I'd ask him to do something in a photo session, he'd say, "Dude, I can't do it, I'm tired." Once I said to him, "It must be awful for you, having to stand against this wall backstage for 2 minutes so you can be on the cover of magazines. You could have a real job, like being a miner or working in Woolworths." He yelled, "Fuck you," which was what he always said to everything. But his general attitude, which made Motley Crue very successful, was fuck the world. Nicky was never as bad as Vince. I arrived to shoot one session, and Nicky and Tommy said, "We've got to talk to you. There's a problem with Vince." It turned out that the previous time I'd shot them, Vince had told me to make him look thin, which wasn't always easy, and I recommended he wear a black t-shirt. That was 2 years earlier, and he was still brooding about it. That's how removed from reality Motley Crue was.
Ross Halfen was so fun to wind up. We just bitch and moan even if we didn't have anything to complain about. It was fun to make his job harder because he took the bait every single time. I was recently in Europe with Ross and I told him that for years I thought he was gay. He went on and on and on about it. Why? How could I do that? He said he was married. He had a son. After I let him go on a bit longer, I said, "Ross, two things. Even if you were, who the hell cares? I was just winding you up again." That's Ross, the easiest wind-up in rock and roll, but a hell of a sweet guy. Hotel, El Paso, Texas, 3 p.m. It's weird to think I used to live here. I used to ride my bike down to Piggly Wiggly with my friends to look at the newest Hot Wheels and toys. They used to have popcorn at the door when you walk in, so we decided we would get our popcorn bags half full and then go to the Hot Wheels section. We'd bury the cars deep into our popcorn and walk out. Man, I fucking miss being a kid. It was a time of innocence. I wish I could go back, because this life is hard. Good news, Tommy met these dealers, and they're going to follow the tour through Texas. We leave in the jet, they follow in their car. Now that's door-to-door service. El Paso, lyric. Balcony in El Paso. Cigarette butts grace my balcony, and the remains of a dead pigeon seem poetic. The life form that scurries around below, it's a mixture of Tex-Mex and trailer park trash. I know you, because I used to live here too. I guess that makes you just like me. Does that make you wonder about yourself? Your secret's safe. I don't know why I'm here, but I can't stay. The more things change, the more they stay the strange. Sitting here on this plane, watching the empty faces crawl past me. You know, they all seem to have ingested the same melancholy pill. Instead of warm, fuzzy, and safe, they seem cold and judgmental. Little conversations come in and out of audio focus. It's all slow motion, but somehow moving at the speed of fear. I feel such the animal. I'm always the animal. My body's the cage. I'm locked in this cage. My home is worn. It's torn. It's been abused, and I like it. I don't know why I'm here, but I can't stay. The more things change, the more they stay the strange. Here I sit in another hotel, and it smells like someone else. I lie in bed, and I can taste the smell. The smell of smoke, the drink, the stink, and the stain on the floor. I wonder, was he with his wife or another man's whore? Scratches upon the glass tell of the drugs, and the radio is still on to the music that made them dance. I bet it was sweet, but me? Fuck, man, I gotta get some sleep. June 24th, 1987. Day off. Hotel, Austin, Texas, 2 p.m. Mars is acting like a school kid around Amy. I mean, it's cute and all, but she is an employee. On stage last night, they were looking at each other all lovey-dovey. Made me want to puke. Chicks equal trouble. Tommy fucked this chick Robin Crosby used to go out with, Tawny Catane. Now she's with the singer from Whitesnake, and they want to open up for us. Like I said, chicks equal trouble. Tawny used to shoot up with Robin, and after I met her, she kept asking